Welcome back to Laravel Podcast Season 3. This is the second interview, Episode 3, where we're going to be talking to Neo Igodaro, big man around town in Laravel, Nigeria. Stay tuned. All right. Welcome back to Laravel Podcast. I got to figure out how to number these things because technically this is episode 3 because the first one was a preview, but that confused a lot of people. So welcome back to the second interview of season 3 of the Laravel Podcast. I have my actually relatively recent friend with me. His name's Neo, and I've been pronouncing it Igodaro the whole time. Is that actually how to say it? How do you say your name? Say it, not me saying it. Can you say it though?
Okay,
I want to hear you say it.
Natively, the G is silent, so it's more like Ihodaro.
Oh.
But a lot of people call it Igodaro, and I kind of feel more comfortable, you know, with Igodaro because it sounds better in my opinion.
So if I tried to say it without the G, you'd actually prefer I say it the way I just said
with
it.
The G,
okay.
Yeah.
I have some friends I have one friend whose name is, I'm terrible, Alberto. Alberto, I don't even know. I don't know Spanish pronunciation. And so I would try to learn how to say it, right? Alberto. And he's like, no, just call me Alberto. And I was like, but that's not your name. And we had this big back and forth. And what he ended up saying was, when an English speaking person says it in an English sentence, I prefer it to be the English pronunciation. And then when a Spanish speaking person says it in a Spanish sentence, I prefer it to be the Spanish pronunciation. And I've never heard anybody say it before because I'm always like, I don't care. I want to pronounce your name the right way. But for me, what more important than the right way is what you want. So I'm here. I'm with you. Neo Igodaro. Okay. Fantastic to have you on. If anybody hasn't heard of Neo before, the way that he has most primarily been known in the Laravel world is because he is one of the three organizers. I don't know. Who's the founder? Are all three of you the founders? What are you the founder? Now three of the organizers. How's that work?
I and Prosper basically are the founders. So
okay.
We just got together and started it. And then we decided to get people on board. And so Linda was the third person.
Okay.
And we have a couple of other people who are like silent, you know, organizers, but you know, they help out every single time we have a meetup.
Okay. And by the way, I didn't actually finish my sentence before I asked you one because I interrupt myself. That Neo and I are talking about is Laravel Nigeria, which is this kind of meetup, but it's kind of a conference because it's as big as all the other Laravel conferences, even though they're calling it a meetup, but people are traveling from 5 hours away. It's a really big deal. So we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. But what I told Neo beforehand was this is not actually about that meetup. This is not actually about you being the CTO of a big tech company. What this really is about is knowing you as a person and what you're about. And if anybody listens to the Taylor interview I did before, we didn't talk so much about Laravel. We talked a little bit about just kind of Taylor and where he comes from. So maybe we'll get down the road there, but the tiniest little bit of context. He's one of the two founders. He's one of the three formal organizers, and there's also some silent organizers of Laravel Nigeria. If you haven't looked it up, I'll put a link to a write-up that he did in the show notes, but you're just seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people once every couple months come together and teach and learn. There's actually a couple of your talks that are online, so I'll make sure to link a couple of those that I think Pusher's hosting. So you can hear him speak and see what he's organizing. He's the CTO of Hotels.ng, which is a really big tech company out of Nigeria. And y'all are in Lagos, right? Pronunciation.
Yeah,
I've been saying so more of them. I've been saying Lagos, like go, but then last night I looked it up and they said Lagos, not ghost. So is that another one?
Exactly.
I'm learning these things.
Lagos,
I also several times when we were first talking, I referred to Lagos as if it were only a city, not knowing it was both a city and a state. So it's kind of like a New York, New York thing, right? Like New York is both a city and a state. Lagos is also a city and a state. So now I know these things.
Yes.
So, and the tiniest bit of context, and I want you to teach me a little more because basically over the last week I've been Wikipediaing all these things, is that Nigeria is the biggest economy in Africa, and then Lagos is the biggest or the most significant economy in Nigeria, and then Lagos City is such a significant economy that it would have been one of the biggest economies in Africa just as a city alone. And it is the 20th largest economy of any city in the entire world. So this is a significant thing because I think a lot of folks, they understand some general names, some general locations, some general cultural concepts of various African cities and states and countries, but I don't know if they have that much context, understanding that this is a huge place. So are you actually in the city or are you in a different city in the state?
It's kind of hard to explain, but Lagos as a whole is like you said, is a city and a state. It's a city and a state because it's quite small, like geographically, it's really small. So you can't really call it a state. And it's so big that you can't really, it's so small that you can't call it a city. They can't not call it a city, I mean. And it's so small in the sense that, okay, like you want to call it a state because officially it is a state, but I mean, it's just too small for you to call it a, you know, any other thing.
Now, is it like Singapore where if you're in the state, you're also in the city?
Yeah, pretty much.
I assume that there were other cities within the state.
No.
Okay, so if you're in Lagos, the state, you're basically in the city.
They're just, so we call them, so we like to call them local governments.
Got it.
Yeah, so they're like small, very tiny little regions that you can probably have, you know, drive like 1 hour across each region.
Okay.
So it's kind of like...
But all those regions are within the city?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Within the cities slash states.
Okay, so yeah, so it is a little bit like Singapore in that way. And when I think of big cities, you know, I spent a couple of years living in Chicago, and so I think about Chicago as being a very large city. So Chicago has 3 million people. And it has, I think, 1.5, no, I'm trying to remember how many square, 230 square miles. And so Lagos has 16 million people, and it has, I think, 400 and something square miles. So we're talking many, many, many times the size of Chicago. And it's also, it's a city, and it's a state, and it's all these kind of things. So I think just getting that kind of out of the way and understanding those things helped me a little bit of the context of why when I was like, oh, yeah, you're in Lagos, you're like, yeah, but, you know, we got to talk a little bit more than that. Okay, so you are in Nigeria. You are the CTO of Hotels.ng. You are doing all this kind of stuff. So let's actually get to the meat of it. First question, when did you first... when did you first have access to a computer, and where was it, and for what reason?
I would say when I was about 13. So back in the day before internet was quite popular in Nigeria, it was really, really difficult to get your hands on a computer. So I think one of those cyber cafes, so they're like, they're not really cafes in the sense of it. They just, it's just like a shop or a, basically a shop where you have a bunch of computers and then you pay some amount of money to get access to those computers and to use their internet. I think one of those days I was about 13 and I got some extra money and I just went to the internet, and it was mostly to chat though.
Yeah. What was the chat protocol that y'all used back then?
I think Yahoo Messenger was very popular then, and MSN.
Okay. Or one remember of those that. Ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was always on them.
So did they have computers in your schools at that point, or not until later?
So it's kind of tricky because we did have computers in the school, but it was not computers for everyone. Like it's like privileged access type
really?
Of computer. Yeah.
Okay.
It was horrible.
I told you beforehand that you get to tell me when I'm digging too far, but what privilege gives you access? Is it a particular type of study or something else? Like what privilege does someone get to use a computer?
Back then, the first thing is, so we had this computer science subject, basically, where we had to like learn about computers, but they usually just write it on the board. I'm like, okay, this is a CPU, this is a disk. Was it disk? Did we call it disk back then? What's the name of that thing? The square thing where you save stuff?
The hard drive?
No. The one back in the day.
Oh, you mean like a floppy disk? Thing.
Yeah, floppy disk. So they'll tell you, okay, this is the floppy disk. And we never saw any of them. We just had pictures. And then once in a while, maybe like once in an entire term, they'd be like, okay, let's go to the computer room. And then we go and we see them. We don't touch them.
Wow.
Like you're actually forbidden to touch them.
Wow.
So you see them and, you know, they're like, okay, that's the CPU that we're talking about. Oh, it looks so cool. But you're looking at from like 5 meters away, like, yo, don't touch
it. Now, why was it that you couldn't touch it? Is it because there's so few that they were precious, or is there something else going on?
Yeah, pretty much. So it was more like a new thing back then. So they were pretty expensive.
Got it.
And they didn't really trust kids back then. So,
understandably.
You know, yeah. So if you became a prefect, for instance, so we have this thing where certain students, depending on your academic abilities or your leadership skills, you become a prefect, so to speak, and then you'll be able to have access to certain things that other students didn't have. As a prefect, I was able to have access, some access, like limited access, but yeah.
But it was still very limited. So it was really the cyber cafe that gave you the space to like do what you wanted to do. So you started out chatting. When did you transition from chatting to thinking that you were going to be able to create something?
I was 15. I remember very clearly the day. So it's actually a kind of funny story. So I was subject to some, you know, bad people in school, and I wasn't really keen on going to school at that point because, like, they were always bullying, like, because I was very little in school. So they were always bullying, and, you know, at some point I was like, you know what, screw this, man, I can't deal. And then I started going to cyber cafes, you know, instead of going to classes, I just, you know, go to cyber cafes. I mean, I'm not happy about it, but yeah.
Like, it is what it is. It's your story, so.
You know? Yeah. So one of these days, one of those days, I decided to, you know, check out an internet cafe, and that was it. I just liked, you know, going there. I felt safe there. I could literally just bury myself in, you know, whatever I was doing and not worry about anything else.
That's really cool. So you spent more and more time there, even skipping class to go there. You were chatting originally, but what was the moment, or was there a project, or what kind of piqued your interest in creating something on the web?
Okay, so I don't really remember the thought process, but I remember thinking at some point. So I saw this one guy. He went to the cafe to, I don't know what he was doing there, but I saw him typing some random stuff. And I was just like, what is this guy doing? Like, it doesn't seem like English. And it just looked random. And I walked up to him and I was like, hey, dude, sorry, but what are you doing? And he was like, he's learning how to program. And that was the moment I just thought, okay, program. So what exactly is a program? And I'm not sure if Google was a thing then, but I know I was using Yahoo search a lot. So I tried to Google and I stumbled upon the word HTML. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I started thinking, hey, how is Yahoo.com actually made?
Right.
And, you know, I started digging and I found out, oh, okay, you need something called HTML. I had no idea what it was. And I was like, okay, you know, I could probably learn that, you know, instead of chatting and wasting my time, I could probably learn how to make HTML. So that was pretty much like the thought process. And, you know, one thing led to another. I just kept on going and finding out more about HTML. I literally did not know the meaning. Like, I didn't actually care. I just wanted to, you know, learn the thing.
That's fascinating. So you learned enough that I'm sure you were, you know, making your own little local HTML things. Do you remember what the first page you made was about?
Oh, it was a personal page, obviously. It was on a site called uni.cc or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was one of these like GeoCities type of, you know, thing where you just go and then they give you like a subdomain and a name, and then you just kind of like mash up the HTML in there. So I created one of those, and I remember, so there was this guy, I've forgotten his name, but he was a really big influence back then. So there was the Time of Grey Matter. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have.
It was a blogging platform. It was close to what we have in WordPress, but it was called Grey Matter. So he used to, I think his name is Tony, So he used to create all these blogs, and then there were like a lot of young people, and they had a lot of blogs that they created. And so they create these blogs, and then they write, you know, they just write random stuff in it. But I was more interested in how the blogs looked. They looked so beautiful. Hmm. And I was like, why does mine just look like a bunch of, you know, marquee running around the screen? And so I was forced to learn design. So I had to start digging in, and, you know, I heard about Photoshop, and so I picked it up.
So I love that you got there, because I went to, when we first met, I went over to Creativity Kills. So would I be right to describe Creativity Kills as essentially your freelance web development kind of company? I don't even, not freelance, but your web development consultancy that was your main thing before you started working at hotels.ng, and you still kind of keep it running on the side. Is that a good description for it, or?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, and when I noticed there, I went to portfolio, and the moment I see, I think it was portfolio or work or something, but what I saw instead of code or descriptions was I saw screenshots. And the moment I see that, I say, this person's probably a designer. And the design was good, too. So you're not just a programmer. Tell me, how do you think of yourself? Do you think of yourself as a designer and a programmer? Have you trained in one more than the other? Or do you think of yourself as like a hack in one and really good at the other? How do you kind of like approach your skill set?
I think to really answer the question, I have to go a little back to the origins. So like I said, I learned about, you know, you have to design your sites for it to look good. And I was like, okay, so how do I get there? And I heard of Photoshop, and I started going to the cyber cafes. Instead of learning how to, you know, write HTML, I was learning how to design.
Okay.
So it was a hassle, to be honest. Like, it was really difficult, because you had 30 minutes to learn. literally 30 minutes
yeah.
to learn everything you wanted to. And I basically started learning, and a couple of people just noticed that I come regularly, and you know, some people just randomly gave me some extra time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I was able to pick up a couple of designs. I actually have a link to one of my first ever designs. I still
That's going in the show notes. That is going in the show notes.
Yeah. So it took me about 12 hours, and 12 hours chopped into 30 minutes.
I was
going
to say, 30-minute increments of 12 hours. And it's not as if you can take it home. I mean, once the 30 minutes is up, now, do you have a thumb drive that you're saving thing on, or how did that work?
I had a floppy disk. Okay. So every time I go, I was like, does this computer support floppy disk? Like, right. No, I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. So I actively look for a computer with a floppy disk, and I had to download Photoshop every time. Single
oh my
time.
Gosh.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
It was hectic.
That's incredible. So, okay, so you taught yourself how to design. So both in terms of design and HTML, I'm assuming that, because I know that when I started, there weren't a lot of books around teaching this. Were you learning it purely online? And if so, do you remember any of the sites you used to learn?
Yeah, I remember the site I used to learn how to make my first ever graphic, but I don't think I really learned any of the other ones. I mean, the tool sets and everything using any site online. I was basically just, you know, mash. It's mash. And it worked.
View source, copy, paste, modify.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So something like that. So I was just editing, like, I'll just pick a tool and drag it across the screen. I'm like, okay, try to figure out what does this do?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But yeah, the first site I learned about actually making vector images was vexels.net. I don't know if they're still around right now. But yeah, it taught me how to take a picture and turn it into a kind of like vector graphic.
Yeah, trace it with the, what are those things called, the pen tool and everything.
Exactly.
Like that. Yeah. Very cool. I think that's pretty similar to how I learned. I remember I got my first book when I was 5 or 10 years into it, and it was such a foreign process because I was like, wait, I have to sit down and read 50 pages, and it just didn't translate. I was just like, no, you just kind of figure it out as you go. So, okay, so you started programming when you were 15. I'm guessing the design was a little bit later than that. At which point did you realize this was not just something that was like a fun thing to do with your time, but it was something you were actually going to consider turning into a career?
I think I was about 17 or 18. That was when I actually started Creativity Kills officially.
Yeah.
Well, unofficially rather. So I had a couple of friends back then, and they had these really nice names for their websites. That was aetherreality.net. They just had really, really random names. And I was like, you know, I could come up with one. And I don't know, I can't remember exactly how, but I was thinking in the lines of, what if you had a company that portrayed, you know, designs to die for? And I sort of just, you know, circulated around that concept until I got to the point Creativity Kills. I can't remember how it clicked or when it clicked, but I just know at some point I was like, you know, Creativity Kills. I mean, it kind of had a negative connotation, especially culturally, but I felt like people needed to ask questions like, okay, well, how does creativity kill? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of was the one thing that I knew could make my brand stand out because people became curious.
Yeah, I love that. It makes you, it doesn't give you all the answers just from reading it. It makes you ask questions, and that's something you wanted.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that clearly lines up with the story you're telling me, is you literally walked over to somebody else in the cafe and said, what is that jumble you're typing into your screen right now? That's really fascinating. Yeah. So did you have any people around you or any role models, where you said, oh, I'm going to do this like that other person I know or that other person I've seen? Or was it more of a just kind of, you know, hey, this is a thing I can try out and see what happens?
For design, yes. The Tony guy, I really can't remember his name. I wonder why. But anyways, the Tony guy, I think I still have him on Facebook or something. He was really... He didn't know it, to be honest. Like, he didn't really... I was just more of a, you know, admire from far type of person.
Yeah.
And I really liked how he designed and everything. So he was sort of my role model in design. But when it came to HTML and PHP and the other, you know, programming language, I didn't really have anybody. Like, it was just me.
Yeah.
Like, just me and nobody else.
So at some point, you went from... what is this computer internet thing to what is this coding thing to what is this design thing to I know these things well enough that I could, you know, make things to I know these things well enough that I could convince somebody else to pay me money to do it. Those are a lot of shifts to happen over the span of, I think, like 2 years, basically. So there's not a lot of other people around you who are doing kind of development consultancies and design consultancies and stuff like that. So how did you figure it out? What were your early challenges? Who are your early clients? Like, what did it look like for you to create Creativity Kills and turn it into actually making income?
So I had to figure out every single thing myself.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about marketing. Those were, they didn't even cross my mind, to be honest.
Yeah.
So when I started, I created a website for it. I don't have the template anymore, but yeah, I was proud of it then. I'm not sure I will be now.
Right.
But so I had this lady, she wanted to create a website for her NGO.
Mm-hmm.
And she met me. She heard of me from my friend. So my friend told her, "Oh, I have this guy. He'll probably be cheap, and he does websites." And
right.
She was like, "Okay, let me meet him." And so I talked to her. She told me, "This is what I want. This is what I want." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And back then, I only knew HTML. To be honest, I didn't know PHP. So I was like, "Okay, so how do I swing this?" So I then went to a cyber cafe again, and I started Googling. No, I was Yahooing, basically, because I don't think I was using Google then. So I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I make a website as dynamic? And I think that's where I stumbled upon PHP. So somebody was talking about PHP and CGI scripts and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, this seems like something to go into. And then I had about 2 months. So I gave a deadline of 2 months to deliver the project. So I had roughly about a month to learn PHP. So PHP just jumped at me. I was like, okay, let me just go with this one.
Yeah.
I heard of ESP. I heard of a lot of ones, but PHP just seemed welcoming. I mean, that's the allure of the language anyways. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I jumped on it, and the learning process was difficult. I didn't pick it up in 1 month. I actually just knew a few things because of, 30 minutes increments. And, at some point, I stumbled upon Grey Matter and WordPress. And then I was like, oh, okay, so this kind of makes you build a website easily. Okay, I could do this. I mean, it doesn't look so complicated.
Yeah.
So I had to figure out how to host websites. So I hosted her website. I paid for the domains and everything. And then in about 2 months, I came and said, okay, hey, look at your website. And she paid me, and I was so happy. Like, this is my first income.
Yeah.
Like, I did it alone, So it was a happy moment for me. But from then on, I started feeling like, what if I could take that one client and kind of expand my reach, try to reach other people? I mean, one person told one person. So obviously there's some sort of system to it. And I started digging about SEO and started digging into marketing. And that's pretty much like one thing led to another. And most of the things I learned, I had to learn because I when you work to a certain degree, you hit a bump, and then you're like, okay, so what to do next?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get introduced to certain concepts, and then you learn about that, and then you hit another bump. And okay, what do I do next? So that was pretty much my learning phase. Like, I just kept on hitting bumps. So initially it was the HTML. Then I was like, the HTML has to look nice. So I had to go to CSS.
Yep.
Okay, now the visual aspects have to look nice. So I went to Photoshop. And then I went back to HTML, and I realized that you can't really do much with HTML. You need some dynamics. And I went to JavaScript. It was really, really difficult, so I left it. And I heard of PHP, and I went to PHP. And I realized I have to go back to JavaScript. So I went back to JavaScript and learned of jQuery. Like, it was just one thing leading to the other.
Yeah, you do what you can until you hit a pain point, and then you figure out the simplest possible thing to fix that pain point, and then move on to the next pain point.
Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so you were writing procedural PHP back then. This is pretty early. I'm guessing it was, right past when WordPress was created. So you got WordPress, you got into Grey Matter. Did you spend just a couple years there, basically building HTML and CSS websites with some Photoshop design and some WordPress and some Grey Matter? Is that kind of your bread and butter for a while before you made shifts over to things like Laravel, anything like that? I mean, Laravel obviously came out much later than that. But what did you kind of sit in that space, or were there other kind of steps in your journey between then and Laravel?
No, I sat there for a while. Like, I really didn't think of structuring or anything. Like, I was there for a long time, probably a year or 3 years. between that range. And I remember the first time I got introduced to CodeIgniter. I think it was, yeah. So I learned about CodeIgniter, and I didn't really understand what MVC was. In my mind, yeah. I just wanted to write spaghetti code and just be done with it.
Yep, yep.
But I started seeing the benefits, I mean, of separating concerns. And I felt like it could help eventually, having all those things separated. Plus, it's a framework. It gives you, like, a jump start. And that was really what sold me. Like, I didn't have to write MySQL connect to this or MySQL connect to that. Like, yeah. I just put my details and I'm done. So I got into CodeIgniter. After a while, I started... So my learning of PHP started evolving from, you know, spaghetti code to, okay, how do we structure an application? And then I started, and this is very interesting, actually. So because I didn't have a laptop or a PC, laptops are a stretch. I didn't have a PC then. I had to do this thing. So I decided to write a framework on my own.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. So I had just 30 minutes in a cyber cafe,
uh-huh.
roughly.
Is this still a floppy disk that you're using, or is this what you're about to tell me?
Yeah, yeah. So a floppy disk. So what I did was I bought a diary. And I literally wrote my code in ink on the diary.
No. Now why couldn't you just save it as HTML files and PHP files down in your floppy disk?
Okay, so let me explain. So I had a couple of minutes wherever I'm going to. So let's just say maximum an hour and 30 minutes at a cyber cafe. That's when I have access. But I don't want to go there and start thinking of what to do.
Oh, so,
exactly.
You're writing in the diary when you're not at the cyber cafe as your brain is roiling over. Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
That's amazing. I mean, I've done that. Like, I've done architectural diagrams on in a journal, and I've done, like, the tiniest little bit of code. But, like, writing a framework that way? Like, no way. So you'd basically show up, and the first thing you do is basically transcribe all your diary notes down into code and then see, hey, did it work? And...
Did it work? No. Oh, bugs, fix, fix, fix. Oh, drag, wow. I forgot this. Yeah, I got to go home. Just log out, go back home, and write
more in your diary.
And so there was this thing. So Nigeria is a very cultural state. And then there was this day my mom stumbled upon the diary, and she thought I was writing a lot of demonic stuff. She was like, oh my God,
no!
What is all this?
It's funny because I was going to ask about your family. So this is perfect. So what did your family think about this whole thing? You're skipping class. I mean, I don't know if they knew you're skipping class, but you're doing these computer things. You're in the cyber cafes all the time. Was that something that you got a lot of support for? You got a lot of criticism for? Or were they kind of ambivalent? They weren't sure how to feel?
A lot of criticism. So an African family is a family that places a lot of value on education. Mm-hmm. So me skipping school then was horrible. I was literally the black sheep of the family instantly. Like, so the day they found out, they were like, I'm so disappointed. How could you do this? Blah, blah, blah. And I was just staring like, sorry.
Yeah,
and then they were like, you know, we're really, really disappointed and everything. And then the day they saw the writings on the book was my mom, and she freaked out. She thought I was like on some demonic you know, tip. And she was like, she's going to call an entire family meeting. So the entire family gathered and they were like, what is this you're writing? And I was not good enough to explain it. So I was just like, it's code. It's code for what? And I was
right. Yeah. Code is it makes computers work.
Yeah. So I couldn't really explain it. And they were like, we don't want to ever see you doing this again. And I was sure. Right. Yeah. But I knew deep down, like, I wasn't going to stop.
How long did it take for you?
I think that was one of the few things that really made me continue, you know, to really fight for it. Just because I felt like it made me a rebel.
Yeah. I love it. How long do you think it took before they really kind of understood? Or do they now?
Yeah, they did. So it took a long time, like until I was in the university, actually. And they started seeing some dividends, like it was paying off. And they were like, okay, this dude hasn't called us to ask for pocket money or anything, actually. Yeah, so they were like, he probably is doing something right. And then we're like, okay, so what is this thing exactly?
Got it.
So they were willing to come to the table and ask me questions like, what does it do? How does it work?
Cool.
And then there's this thing in Nigeria. So they are internet fraudsters. A lot. They scam people of money and blah, blah, blah. But the idea is, back in the day, when they see you any young person in front of a computer, that is the instant thing they think, that you're a fraudulent person, that you're being, they call it the Yahoo Yahoo guy.
They call it, can you say it again? It didn't come through in Skype.
Yahoo, Yahoo, like Yahoo twice.
Got it.
So they call you Yahoo Yahoo boy. And so they were really concerned that that's what I was doing. They really wanted to know because it was illegal and they didn't want any, you know, any of the stuff. And I was like, no, I promise it's not actually that. Like, it's literally the opposite. And they, you know, they sort of just went with it. I don't know if they really believed.
Right.
But yeah, they just had faith. So I guess they started to come around from then.
That's fascinating. And that transitions to the university. So at some point you were doing CodeIgniter, and I assume that was before university. At what point did you decide to go to university, or was this all happening at the same time?
Pretty much at the same time. Like,
okay.
So after they found out that I've been skipping school, I had to change schools. So I had to go to another one somewhere closer that it could monitor my movements. And
got it.
It didn't really stop me, actually. Like, I did what I wanted to do. The good part was I was sort of book smart. So,
right.
So I was able to ace my exams and everything.
Right.
So that was the good part. So I didn't really need to go to school because I knew if they found out that I didn't do a couple of tests, they'll probably come and check the attendance sheet and everything.
Right.
So I made sure I aced most of my tests, most of my exams. But on the low, I was still, you know, trying to figure out what this entire programming thing was about.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you went off to, so what did you actually study in university? Was it programming or was it engineering, or like, what was the actual formal title of it?
Mathematics and economics.
Oh, okay. Is that something you use in your daily life right now?
Nope.
All right. Well, you know.
Very big no.
You know, yeah. I mean, I studied in English education when I was in school. So, I mean, technically I don't use it, although the experiences I had there still inform me today. So, all right. So you went to university, you graduated from university, you got that degree. At what point did you transition from being Neo of Creativity Kills, who does kind of freelance contracting stuff, to Neo, who is, I mean, you're doing stuff out in the community. We'll talk about that in a bit. You're working at hotels.ng. Now, I did see you had a blog post. I think it was in maybe 2016. So was this a pretty recent transition for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what was that like?
So let me step back a little.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another interesting story. So ever before I owned my first laptop, how I got it was, so there was this guy, Koladi. He wanted someone, like he had a friend who wanted like a programmer on one of their projects. And then it was like, okay, Neo, you need to get on this. And I was like, you know, I don't have a laptop. And he was like, okay, you know what? I'll tell them, they'll get you a laptop and then we can go from there. And I was like, how do I pay for it? They were like, you know, don't worry. And I was like, okay, cool. And right. I was so excited, but I just wanted to, you know, play cool, be cool, be cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they brought the laptop and it was ugly. I mean, I appreciate it. I mean,
right.
I still have it.
Nice.
Yeah, I appreciate it, but it was horrible. Meaning, like, if you unplug the laptop, it would go off. The battery was finished.
It's like a big gray box kind of thing.
Yeah. And the problem with that was the situation of power in the country. Like, you could literally go for an entire 24 hours without power at all. And the internet was so expensive, but I mean, somehow I was able to manage. I had to go to school a couple of times. There's this hub where you could plug your stuff in.
Got it.
So I'd go there and plug. And I remember some of those people always laughing at the laptop, like, what is that?
Right.
And I was like, you know, just ignore them, them and do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Fast forwarding, I had a sort of big break. Right. So it was during the period where BlackBerry was very popular in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. So I created this website with PHP. I think that's actually the first product I've ever created for myself.
Right.
It was called FlashDP. So what it did was it took it used Image Magic to create a GIF. And then you were able to use that GIF as a display picture on your BBM, BlackBerry Messenger.
Yeah.
So I did it because I was like, you know, I wasn't too rich. Let me rephrase that. I was poor. So I had to find a way to make money at least.
Right.
So I found out people really liked these GIFs. And I used to create them on Photoshop a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about it, like, there has to be a way to do this in, you know, PHP or some language. And I was like, okay, let me try. And so I sat down that day and I used Kohana. I don't know if you know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Kohana framework. Yeah. So I used it and I came up with FlashDP and I gave a friend. So I was hosting it on Pagoda Box. So I gave a friend, like, hey, help me try this stuff. See if it works. And I went to bed. The next morning, the server had crashed.
Oh, my gosh.
What is happening? Like, what happened? And then I went to analytics and I checked. Wow, okay, a lot of people used it. And because it was very resource intensive, I mean, it was image magic trying to generate images over and over again. I was like, okay, let me try and, you know, reboot the server. I didn't really know about servers then, but it was a, you know, click and, you know, reboot thing. So I decided to create a version 2. And now the version 2, I decided, okay, let me just give everybody, like, let people use it, right? I mean, it doesn't hurt. And then I gave people, and I just put AdSense on it. And that was literally one of the best decisions I made ever. Because in the space of, so I created it in 2013, yeah. And in the space of about a year or two, I made about $37,000.
What? What? Yeah. Just from AdSense?
And in Nigeria, that's huge, yes. In Nigeria, that's huge. Like, that was huge money. Yeah. So I was able to get my first MacBook. I was able to get an iMac. And literally, that point was the turning point. Because I had all the tools I needed. I didn't need to write in a diary anymore.
Right.
I could, you know, I could practice it without need for power for a long time at least.
Yeah.
You know, I literally had everything I needed to actually become better. And I felt so empowered. And that was around the period when I was in school. So I had a lot of time to myself.
Right.
Like a lot of time to learn, a lot of time to actually go back. And that's when I started redesigning Creativity Kills again. I went back to the drawing board and I was like, okay, how do we appeal to people? And I spent about 8 months creating that site. And I released it. And I think it was on awards.com. For a honorable mention or something like that.
Nice.
And I was really proud of myself. Like, I came out and I did it. Like, it was crazy for me. But, I mean, creating FlashDP itself was the turning point. Like, that was the landmark in everything.
That's incredible. I feel like I could dig into just this part of your story for another hour. I'm trying to keep this short, so I'm going to move on. But that is fascinating. So you said that was 2013. So at that point, you had gone from CodeIgniter. You had moved over to Kohana. So let's move into modern Neo. Let's move into Laravel. Let's move into the Laravel Nigeria meetup. Let's move into hotels.ng. When did you transition from Kohana to Laravel, and what made you make that transition?
So FlashDP made me make the transition.
Okay.
So it was around this period where people were arguing about whether to use static methods or not. Yeah, and I started feeling bad about Kohana because it had a lot of static methods. And I was like, okay, so is there something out there that's better? I mean, obviously, there might be. So I started digging and I found out about, I think, was it FieldPHP?
Yep.
I think Slim. I don't know if Slim was really around then, but I know I saw a bunch of them and I heard of Laravel and I was like, I like the name. Laravel, it has a ring to it. And that was literally the only reason why I jumped on it.
Wow.
Like, I just liked the name. I was like, okay, I could try this. But I think it was around version 4, was around that period or something like that. And I was like, okay, so how does this work? I mean, it's usually the usual like MVC stuff. And I was like, okay. Yeah, this seems cool. And I realized that every single thing I did was easy. Like, you want to do this? Easy.
It just works.
Easy. Yeah. So I was like, you know, hooked. And I was like, okay, I'm sold. And it was hard for me leaving Kohana because I'd built a lot of packages back then.
Right.
I built a honeypot module or component. I've forgotten what they called them, but it was a package for Kohana then. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of tied to the community, but I felt, you know, if it's better with Laravel, I mean, I could just try it. So that was my switch. I created version 2 of FlashDB using Laravel 4. So I just basically kept on digging into Laravel and digging and digging and digging. And I also picked up Objective-C during that period.
All right.
I got an iPhone and I learned of jailbreaking. And I learned you could create awesome stuff using a language called Objective-C. So I pretty much dived into it and, you know, started learning Objective-C, creating jailbreak tweaks and all that stuff.
Very cool.
So now my transition into being new. Okay, so I had this thing where I said I was never going to work
for someone else,
the company,
right?
Yeah. But I realized that if I was to run any successful business, you need experience. Like it goes without, you just need it. So I was like, okay, so I have to pick the right company. Like you just don't jump into it, right?
Yep.
So from, I think, 2015, I started scoping the Nigerian, you know, tech scene. Like, okay, so who would I want to work for? I was nobody. Like I wasn't really known, but I knew I was good.
Yeah.
So I started digging, and I found nothing, to be honest. Like I found nothing that I felt I wanted to work for.
Yeah.
Until I think 2016. So I was still in Benin. I schooled outside Lagos, by the way.
Okay.
So I was still in Benin, and I went to a school called University of Benin. That's UniBen. And then I sort of heard of hotels.ng, and I didn't really think much of it. Like I hadn't heard much about it. So I was like, meh.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend called Linda. Yeah. So cool story. She was the friend of somebody I knew back in the day. So my friend had been telling me, okay, Linda, she's really good. She's really good. And I was like, who is this Linda? Who is she? So I went online and I researched, and I heard she was the head of product at Hotels.ng. And so I just pretty much said hi. Like, oh, hey, how you doing? And when we got to talking a little, and then we kind of just hit it off. Pretty much, and we were just talking and talking, and then I told her, I think I told her that I wanted to, I'm looking for a gig or something. Can't really remember the backstory, but I remember receiving an email. So I came to Lagos because my mom had an accident, almost mortal one. Like she was in the sick bed for a long time. So I was really sad. I came down to Lagos and went to see her in the hospital. It was a very bad, like a very depressing moment in my life. But I mean, coming back gave me some sort of perspective on life. Like, okay, like things don't last forever. Like you need to use, you know, whatever you have as quickly as you can. And so I think I sent an application. I'm not really sure if I applied or not, but I remember receiving an email from Mark ACN. He's the CEO. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, I heard about you from Linda. Can you come to the office for an interview? And my initial reaction was no, but I didn't even though you
had sent something into them, right?
Yeah. And then I thought about it. I was like, you know what? It doesn't hurt. Let me just, you know, go. So that was literally my first interview ever.
Ever anywhere.
And I was about 20-something then, 26-ish. And I was like, okay, let me just go. And I went, and I remember him sitting in the office with three devs. Linda wasn't around. I think she was on leave then. He was like, okay, what are these? And he was calling computer science terms. I really didn't know any of them. And I was like, okay, so if this interview is to go like this, I'll literally fail because I don't know any of these terms.
Did you say that out loud?
Yeah, I did. Totally. Like, I don't know any of these terms.
Right.
So just give me a laptop and I will show you what I can do.
Right.
And then he looked at me for like 5 minutes and it was for like a minute or so. And then it was like, okay. And then he left. And then sort of, I just felt like I'd already, you know, gotten the job, you know. And then he left me with the devs and they kept on asking me different questions like, okay, this, that. And then one of them was like, I think I've seen your creativity kill somewhere. And I was like, ha, sold.
Brilliant.
And then he was like, yeah, you know, okay, so can you show us stuff you've done? And then I brought out my laptop and then I showed him. So I had this music site I created using Angular and PHP back then, and Laravel. Mm-hmm. So I showed him, and the first thing he was like was, do you design your code? Because it was so cleanly written. Like it was during a period where, you know, Jeffrey was always talking about, you know, small controllers, thin controllers, this, that, best practices, solid, this, that. And he literally asked me, do you design it? Like, do you sit down and format your code? And I was like, no, not really. I don't know. Like, maybe I have OCD or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was really impressed at the structure of the code. And he was like, wow, like, he's never seen anybody designing this. Like, your code, you just write code. Like, it makes no difference to the compiler, you know?
Right.
I was like, I like to see my code as art.
Yeah.
If I feel good about it, like I feel happy, but I just don't want to jumble everything up. And he was like, okay, cool. So I think that was the day I got the job. So I hadn't even gotten home and I got another email saying, you know, you're hired. And I was like, can you start tomorrow? I was like, okay.
All right.
That's a big leap.
and you hired as a programmer up front, right?
Yeah, okay. As a programmer. So I hadn't even settled with the fact that I just got my first interview. I already had my first job.
Right.
And so I decided to go in, and what really caught me was the culture. So I've always had this culture, this ideology of what I want Creative Skills to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally saw everything right there. Like, it was there. And that was what sold me.
Yeah.
Like, everybody seemed so compact. You know, there was fun. There was a very good mixture of fun and, you know, work.
Yeah.
And that was literally what made me stay.
That's very cool. And Mark's very young too, right? So it's not as if you were joining this kind of giant pre-existing thing. It was other people with a kind of same young Nigerian kind of figuring this out as we go kind of mindset.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. So because I want to ask you an hour of questions about hotels.ng, but because we're getting close on time, what I want to do is talk about a few things real quick. So first of all, we're going to talk about the Lagos tech scene, because you mentioned about how you looked around there and it obviously exists, but I would guess that when you first started, there really wasn't much of a tech scene. So I want to hear your thoughts on that. I want to hear your thoughts about the meetup. And then the last thing I want to hear about hoodies. So let's start with the Lagos tech scene. So when you first started, you said there weren't a lot of people around you that you could look at. There weren't people who you're saying, that is this person in my town who I want to be like, and I want to, you know, identify with that person. I want to be like them. So do you have any thoughts? Did you watch the transition happen where all of a sudden there were other Laravel developers around you and other tech companies? Do you have any kind of anything to share with us about what that growth process looked like?
So yeah, like when I started, there was nobody. Either there was nobody or they were there, but you know, social media wasn't as prevalent as it is now. So I didn't really notice or see anybody. But the first person I did notice was Prosper.
Okay.
So I just knew he was making a lot of noise. Like, he was, he's very, very energetic. Like, yes. He can shout. So he's an energetic person. And I kind of noticed him and I was like, who's this guy? Like, and he was always saying community. What is the community? What is it exactly?
Right.
Like, there is no community. I'm not seeing anything. And he just kept on going. And I was like, you know, maybe there is a community after all. And so getting to hotels.ng kind of gave me a lot of, because hotels.ng is kind of a big thing when it comes to tech.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we like to support tech a lot. And it kind of gave me, it's almost like I swallowed something and now my eyes were opened. And I sort of saw that there was potential. Like, there were a lot of people. But there was just no real leadership. Like, people were not just organized, but the people were there. It's just like, you know, Lego blocks. They were there, but nobody could put them together.
Got it.
So that was literally how I noticed. And I realized that what Prosper was trying to do was to get people to come together.
Very cool.
And create that actual community that he was shouting about. And that was when I realized that it's possible for us to create something that would kind of unite every single hungry developer, for any developer that's been hungry for knowledge for a while. We could unite them, and you know, people could come out and give speeches. And then we did a lot of research on meetups and conferences. And from there on, like, it has been like up. We've just been noticing that people have just been waiting, literally, for someone to start. And once there was that spark, like, it just happened so quickly. Everybody was, you know, meet up here. Right now, as I speak, they're having a GDG summit and a bunch of others. Next week, I have about, the entire week is literally booked up. You know,
wow.
I have a talk in Android, Nigeria. And there are a lot of meetups coming up everywhere.
So this is all pretty recent.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I would say about 3 years. 2 years.
Because I see you, I mean, I follow you on Twitter and I see you posting stuff about a meetup or a conference. It feels like every week you're at a different place, meeting new people. So this is all just a couple years old then.
Yeah, pretty much.
So did I hear you right in saying there? It's not that that tech scene wasn't there, but it was very kind of individualized. Like, people were really kind of in their own world. A lot of people probably have a pretty similar story to yours, where people are figuring it out on their own. And just recently, there was, you know, Prosper helped, you helped, and other folks helped, realizing there's a lot of potential if we bring all these people together in one, and all of a sudden they're exploding. So I'm seeing you nodding, but I asked you a question. So is that a safe way to say it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's literally how it happened.
What do you think the thing that kicked that? Could you point to a single meetup or a single person or a single event, or were there a lot of them kind of all starting up at the same time?
I might be wrong, but I would point at 4Loop. So there's this meetup called 4Loop. It was started by Ridwan. So I think he was one of the first people that started the entire meetup thing. I might be wrong again, but it was the one I noticed.
Sure, from your perspective, yeah.
Yeah, it was the one I noticed first. And it kind of had the ideologies that most meetups outside the countries have. Like you just get a bunch of coders to come to the table and just talk about new tech. And that was literally my first meetup. So I was like, you know, I want to speak at 4Loop. And that was literally my first ever talk. So I spoke on Docker and I was like,
cool.
Let's see how this goes. And it was really successful. I mean, we're having not as much numbers as we have now because it was just starting out. But that was the first meetup I've heard of from my own perspective. So I think that was the turning point for everything. I'll literally say 4Loop.
So do you remember when you first attended or when you first spoke at 4Loop, when that was and how many people there were there at that point?
I'm not too sure about when, but I know the first one I attended because we hosted it in my office. We used to host meetups at hotels at NG. I think there were about between 50 to 80 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So to us, that was like big numbers. Like we really thought.
I mean, the meetups in my local town don't get that many people most of the time. Oh. So, and they've been going for years. So, okay. I mean, and you've noticed that people are getting excited about Laravel Nigeria. I mean, part of it is because you never heard of it all. And then all of a sudden you got 400 people and you're running out of space for people to sit. So the rapid success that you've seen, because you said you don't remember, but it was at your office. So it had to have been within the last year probably, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So this is very, very, very recently. I mean, you went from attending 4Loop the first time with 50, 80 people. You went to speaking at 4Loop for the first time. You went to helping kind of Prosper and Linda and others create Laravel Nigeria for it not existing at all to all of a sudden having hundreds and hundreds of people and running out of space. And we're all talking about the span of basically the last 12 months or less. This is a pretty incredible growth process. And that's why people they're saying, wait a minute, where did this all come from? And that's why I asked the question about the tech scene. It didn't come out of nowhere, but the organization that gave the space for it to be seen and for it to be brought together seems to really happen quickly. But what it did was it touched on something that's been there for a long time, right? Yeah. It's individuals. It's an entrepreneurial spirit. It's the desire to do all these things and the motivation to do it, even when you only have 30 minutes at a time, even when you got, you know, rolling power black and stuff like that. There's something. There's a reason where a lot of people keep saying, whoa, keep your eye on Nigeria. So that's, I mean, again, I could talk a whole hour about that, but you know, I'm trying to keep everything short here. So, all right. So we talked about the Lagos tech scene a little bit. We talked about the meetup a little bit. I do want to hear you give a pitch. If somebody has never heard of Laravel Nigeria, give me a pitch about what it is. And I asked you a lot of questions when we first talked about, well, where are people are coming from and what are your timelines and what are your goals and all this kind of stuff. So tell me a little bit about the meetup. Tell me a little bit about where it is right now. When's the next one going to be? What are the things you're excited about? What are the things you're nervous about? What are the difficult and exciting parts about doing it?
Okay, so I remember when I thought of Laravel Nigeria, initially it was around December 2016, and I talked to Prosper. That was one of our first few conversations, and I was like, what would it be like if we had, you know, Laravel in Nigeria? And I initially called it, I can't remember the name, but I called it something different, and it was like, you know what, that seems like a good idea. Why don't we do it? I had zero knowledge on meetups, like zero.
Yeah.
I literally didn't know where to start. And we were like, okay. And then we kind of just didn't do it. So January passed, February passed, March. I can't remember when we did the first one. But all of a sudden, I just woke up one morning. I was like, let's just do it. And then I called him. Yeah. I met him at a cafe, Cafe New, funny enough. So there's a cafe in Nigeria called Love Cafe it. New. So I met him there and I was like, guy, we should do this thing. And I want to speak in Pidgin. So Pidgin is a weird form of English that we speak in Nigeria.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah, it's called Pidgin English. So like, guy, make we do this thing now. So literally saying, guy, let's do this stuff. And then it was like, okay, how do we start? And we're like, we should create a meetup page first. And I was like, okay. So I tried with my card and it didn't work. So he did. His card worked. And then he created a meetup page. I created a Twitter page. I started working on the website. Generally, I just noticed people were joining the meetup page and we haven't really started talking about it. We just, you know, put a couple of things there and say, okay, we might be hosting a Laravel Nigeria meetup. Might. Like, that was the word, might. And then people were like, oh, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great. And the meetup page was just going higher and I was like, okay, what is happening? And then that kind of put pressure in me to actually do the meetup because I was kind of nervous that it'll fail. I remember telling some of my colleagues at work that I don't know if I can actually do this. I mean, it's huge. It's a huge thing. I don't have the money to sponsor it, but how would I do it? And then someone was like, just ask for help. And I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. So the strategy I did was I went to the Laravel source code itself. And I was like, okay, so what companies are generally interested in Laravel? So, I mean, that would be the companies that are more likely to support, right? So I looked and I saw Pusher, I saw Nexmo and a couple of others. And I was like, okay, Pusher, oh, okay. And then I spoke to, I think around that period, I just started guest writing for them. So I messaged someone in their team and she was like, okay, that sounds great. And I was like, okay, cool. I didn't really believe it, but she was like, yeah, sure.
Right.
And back then we had about 100 people who RSVP'd and I was feeling like it wasn't enough. But she was really, really like, oh my God, 100? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, that's huge. Oh, support. And so, I mean, that's the journey. We started getting people to support the entire thing. We couldn't use hotels.ng space because 100 people, like, it wouldn't fit. So we talked to Andela, which is a company that outsources developers to bigger companies. And I think Facebook invested in them recently. And so I talked to them and they were like, yeah, sure, why not? I mean, we're all for the community, yay. And I was like, okay, cool. And so we had that. So if I was to tell someone about Laravel Nigeria, I would literally say from my own perspective, it's the belief that you can bring something out of nothing. The belief that you don't have to know about it to be able to do it. Like, you just need to take the first step. Like, nobody's perfect at anything. And Laravel Nigeria was a shot in the dark, granted, but it was a lot of hard work and that shot paid off. I mean, it might have not paid off, but it did. I wouldn't have known if I didn't try. Yeah. So what we try to do now is tell people, hey, talk to everybody, try and get people, you know, in remote communities, because right now Lagos seems like the place where a lot of things are happening. We want to get people from other states, you know, mobilize your people, try and get people to attend meetups. And like in the past 1 month or 2 months, I've attended meetups where in places where I didn't expect people to come. I'm like, wow, okay. Yeah. Like crazy. This is Uyo. There's a state called Uyo. Like I didn't expect so many people to come out and people were out and I was like, okay, so it's happening. So Laravel Nigeria is literally the belief that, you know, there are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of people who want it to happen. There are a lot of people who are hungry for this knowledge. A lot of people who already know, but just need a platform to come out and start speaking. And this has given them a lot of that hope and a lot of that platform they need to really come out and be leaders, because that's what we want to create. So a lot of leaders that can lead the new generation of developers, basically.
I love it. I've said 1,000 times I could talk for another hour. I can't, but I'm going to wrap it up with just three more questions. Sure. Number one, you're a hoodie enthusiast. what makes the perfect hoodie?
The color black.
I was just going to say, you're a black hoodie enthusiast. Yeah. And you walk around with the hood up all the time.
Every time.
Do you want it to be thick? Do you want it to be thin? Do you want it to be stretchy? Do you want it to be not stretchy? What's the perfect hoodie for you?
Stretchy. Not thick, because we live in a very hot climate. So
yeah.
Not thick. And it should really, you know, like cover my face. So I used to be very timid. That's why I fell in love with hoodies. Uh-huh. So with a hoodie, I felt like, you know, nobody sees me. I'm like invisible.
Right. You're protected a little.
Exactly. Yeah. So it just sort of made me feel very protected. Right now I don't feel that way, but I've grown to the point where I really love hoodies. I love the ideology behind it. Like, I don't know why, but yeah, I'm just attracted to hoodies like that. But it has to be black.
Okay. A thin black hoodie.
Yeah.
I got it. That makes sense. All right. Next thing. Has there been one piece of advice or one something someone said to you or something that really has stuck with you across your career?
Not really, but I remember my mom. So there was this period, and she probably wouldn't even remember saying it, the period when we had these hardships and people didn't understand what I was doing and my family was wilding out and everything. She called me and she told me, so she has this habit of waking me up by 3 a.m. if she wants to discuss some very specific stuff. And then she woke me by 3 a.m. I was sleepy-eyed and she was like, I don't know what you're doing, but if that's what you want to do, then do it. And I was like, okay. And I went back to bed. But literally every single time I decide to do something, I just remember that point. Like, if it's what you want to do, just do it. Like, literally just start. So every single thing I've done ever since has just been with that thing in mind, like, just do it. I mean, excuse me, it really can't be difficult. I mean, it can be difficult, but you would never know if you don't do it. So I think that would be the one watchword that I always, you know, if I want to pick up a new programming language, just do it. Like, just start.
Yeah, I love it. And the one last thing is there one part of your story, one part of what has gotten you from, you know, 13 years old, first walking to a cyber cafe between there and here, where you say, and obviously there's many of these moments, but you say, if that thing hadn't happened, if that person hadn't done that thing, or if I hadn't tried that one thing, or if I hadn't whatever, I'd be in a completely different place now. Is there one really kind of significant thing that you really reflect on often?
Yes. So I would say it was the bullies, strangely enough.
Like, wow. I think Tell me more.
If I wasn't bullied in school, I probably would have just been, because like I said, I was very book smart. I probably would have studied something very differently, probably, you know, but the bullies just kind of forced me to move away a little and have some sort of new passion. Back then, I really didn't have any passion. Like, I was more of an introvert, so I didn't really have any passion. Like, I just like sitting at home reading books. So I think that point was a big turning point, even if I didn't realize it then, but it was a huge turning point in everything.
Man, that's amazing. I mean, not amazing that you were bullied, but amazing how that could be redeemed and turn into the whole story that you just told me. I've got to make another podcast so I can talk to you for longer or something. I don't even know, but this has been amazing. I really appreciate your time and for sharing with us. I really am thankful for your contributions to the Laravel community. We all benefit from it. And before we cut for the day, is there anything you want to tell people or anything you want them to know about or anything like that? Or do you feel like we've covered everything here today?
I would say we have pretty much covered a lot of stuff. I mean, there's really nothing to tell. Like, just if I'm talking to my Nigerian brothers out there that are probably going to listen to this, I think a lot of people keep asking me, like, oh, how are you able to do this? How are you able to do that? It's really not that difficult if you think about it. I mean, there are going to be challenges every single time. I tell them, like, if you have something and you didn't have to work for it, you would not appreciate it. There will be challenges. But in hindsight, when you think about the challenges, they might not be as big as you're making them seem. Like, okay, yes, we don't have a lot of power in Nigeria. Okay, yeah, but I mean, there are other ways around it. Like, you could probably, you know, get a generator, or you could, I mean, just in whatever way you want to, try and feed your imagination. And it doesn't only apply to coding. It could be anything, literally. I feel like anybody can be anything they want. You just need to get yourself out of the way first.
That's beautiful. Okay. Is there anything in Pidgin that you would really like, that all your friends from Nigeria would like totally flip out if they heard you say is like the last words of the Laravel podcast? Because if there is, say it and that'll be the end.
Let me see. And I don't listen to Laravel in Nigeria and I don't hear the podcast from Matt Stauffer. So as Nadisi, anything is possible. Like, I was literally nothing before, but now Nadisi me, I'm on Laravel podcast and it's been a dream, and I'm really grateful for it and I appreciate it. So thank you.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Neo.
All right. Thank you very much.